Hello there, everybody, and welcome to this Rainmaker webinar, the second of our six webinar series. We're going to talk about a podcast strategy, as the headline says, attracts attention and builds your content arsenal. And Brian, you and I have spent a lot of time over the past couple of years now working on podcasts and working on audio, but not just creating a podcast. You know, really using that as a springboard for creating something so much more. And I think that's one of the big ideas that we want to get across is that, you know, it's not just about creating podcast episodes when you launch a podcast. It's really about having a bigger idea, a bigger strategy in mind, and really using that to seed an entire content strategy and content library that you can obviously then use to execute in your digital commerce strategies. And that's what we're going to talk about today with the presentation that you have prepared to begin. And then I will go through after that and show folks a detailed demo of how you actually use the podcast features inside of the Rainmaker platform, which will give people a good idea of what's possible, what they can do. So it'll be an entertaining and informative hour or so, or however long we go.
So as Jared mentioned, in recent years, there have been people who have built businesses pretty much out of a podcast, because a podcast like a blog or a video show or what have you is an audience building strategy. Now, as Jared also mentioned, the great thing about podcasting or creating audio content is that it's a perfect starting point for multiple forms of content. You're not just creating quote unquote a podcast. There's multiple ways to think about that content, and there's also multiple ways to deploy that content. And that's really what we're trying to get across to you today. So again, we're building an audience regardless of modality, medium, whatever you want to call it. And that means you need to begin with the end in mind. What are you trying to accomplish here? So we talk about content marketing, which is effectively giving away valuable free content that its very nature gets people in a position, you attract them to you, but it's also educating them to do business with you. Jared mentioned the words digital commerce. That's a specific form of content marketing where you're really integrating media content with digital products and services and building a business that way. It's a great way to start a business as opposed to general content marketing, which you can, of course, use to market your existing business. But the principles are the same regardless of what approach you're trying to take. So when I say, what are you trying to accomplish? You know, that could be, I need clients for my freelance design business, or I'm a realtor and I need more clients so that I can match them up with houses. It could be selling ebooks, online courses, hosting, SaaS systems. You know, the possibilities are endless as long as you know where it is you're trying to get to as far as that customer acquisition point. Now, things don't end once you get a customer. Really, they just begin. But let's just stick with that at this moment, because that's really the genesis of any audience building strategy. So the next thing is to just take that hard question to yourself and say, okay, why would anyone want to buy your ebook? Why would anyone want to hire you as a designer? And this is not meant to be too self-critical. It's just a necessary exercise to figure out, okay, what is it that is about the endpoint that I'm trying to get to, that I can lead people along on a journey from perhaps not knowing me at all to the point where they're raising their hand and they're saying, hey, you're who I want to do business with, right? And okay, so you realize, okay, I'm a designer, or I'm a realtor, or I have an information product, an online course. You know what you're trying to achieve at this point. Now it's time to really drill in on who these people are, you know. What do they need to know? This is the fundamental aspect of a content strategy, in that you have to understand who they are, how they view the world, their perspective on the problem or desire that they have. And when you understand that type of person, you can start to begin to craft not only the topics that your content is going to cover, but a lot of the more intangible elements of how you speak to people, what's your demeanor, your voice, your attitude, that kind of thing. And that really boils down to the fact that you need to connect with people in the way that they view the world. Now, worldviews are very diverse. They can be political. You can have Republican or Democrat. You can have a fitness enthusiast, or a different worldview of that is gym rat. You know, we have different perspectives, and we're trying to identify how this audience, these real live people, view the world. And often we're trying to match up ourselves, our authentic personality and voice, with the same type of people. Not that they're exactly like you, don't make that mistake, but it's much easier to resonate with people if you in fact are speaking their language. Makes sense, but it takes a pretty careful analysis, just some upfront research to figure out who these people are, what are they responding to already out there in the marketplace, and how can you be different? Jared, if we look at the next slide, I'll try to make this a little more concrete. So these are elements of what may be considered a branding exercise, but that confuses people when you drill it down to that thing where some people think that means your logo. But branding is really the totality of the promise and the experience that you're offering people. So four things I want to talk about here. What's your story? How you're positioning yourself in that story, the frames with which you tell the story, and the voice you use to do it. Now, that can be very abstract. So I'm going to take a brand new project of mine, one that hasn't gone to the level of a copy blogger or some of our more mature things, and tell you exactly my thought process when I put it together. So I have a new podcast called Unemployable. And let's go through these four things step by step so you'll see what I'm talking about here. What's your story? So why would I do a podcast called Unemployable, which is effectively for freelancers, solopreneurs, creative entrepreneurs, basically anyone who's operating outside of the world of traditional employment? So my personal story in that regard, you know, the value that I can bring to that conversation is that for the last 17 years, I've basically evolved from quitting my job to being a solo practitioner to being a slightly, well, pretty much more ambitious entrepreneur who did well in many respects, but had problems with growing pains and scalability and all that kind of thing, till I get to the copy blogger years. That's a new phase of my life. And then in 2010 with Copy Blogger Media, when we merged several companies together, that's another phase that I've gone through. So I've kind of boiled this down, and this has resonated with people, that my evolution from solo to CEO, and that was a good turn of phrase because people responded well to that. So the next thing is positioning. And positioning, like I said, is basically how you're telling the story in the context of them, not me. So I started with my life experiences, but it's really about them. So start with the name itself, Unemployable. You know, it's kind of a joke among the self-employed that it's not like we can't get jobs. We just would rather not. It's not about the money. It's not about status. It's about freedom. First and foremost, freedom, I think, is what drives the type of people that I'm trying to reach. And the word unemployable resonates strongly with these people. That was my hypothesis. And in the first month or so of doing the show, I've seen it. You'll see on Twitter, people say, this is me. This is what describes me. This is who I am. You talk about building a tribe, you know, and being a member of the tribe you would hope to lead or to at least provide guidance to. That's what you're aiming for. Now, there are some people who don't resonate with that word. I had one guy who was actually offended. That didn't surprise me either. Pretty much everything you do is going to offend someone if other people love it. So it's so natural to go in with your positioning and try not to offend everyone. And you realize you get no traction because no one loves you. find some people to resonate strongly with. That's what good positioning does. Now, it doesn't have to be something quasi confrontational or anything like that. You know, copy blogger way back in the day was a contrast to pro blogger, but it was also a complement to what my friend Darren Rouse was doing over there, in that we're talking about the same thing, but I'm providing a different approach and a different business model. And really, that's why Copyblogger took off at the time. Now, Copyblogger is just a brand. I don't think anyone really thinks about what it means. It's just kind of become synonymous with content marketing. So think about your positioning in that standpoint. What does it mean in the mind of the person, the type of people that you're trying to reach? Does it resonate strongly? Great. Is it designed to be bland and not really cause much of a stir? The worst thing you can do is invoke indifference. Don't worry about the haters. Ignore them. Okay, frames. So a frame is, you've started with an overall story, and then you position that story for the audience. And in effect, they're the hero, and I'm the guide who's helping them along on their own journey, which in many ways has been similar to mine. But a frame is kind of like, how do you shoot a scene in a movie? One theme in Unemployable is the coming employment catastrophe that's going to happen when robots and algorithms and automation eliminate all the jobs. Of course, that is completely overblown. But it's a real thing. I mean, people are going to lose their jobs. And really, the type of people I'm trying to talk to are very creative. They're able to interact with social environments in a very sophisticated way. And these are the people that are going to be fine, whether they want a job or not. So the frame that I present that aspect of what's happening in the world today is that you are five steps ahead of everyone, because you've already learned the hard job of functioning on your own without an employer, without the traditional illusion of a safety net that employment can provide. So it's a very positive frame, and that's completely true. It's not like I'm making it up. That's how I feel. That's what I think. That's my analysis of the current environment. But by communicating that with the audience, I'm resonating even stronger with them at a more granular level within the overall theme of the podcast. And then finally, voice. That's just kind of the way you choose to speak to people. And voice is in particular pretty strong in the podcasting or audio area. We talk about writing voice and people with really strong voices like Sonia Simone. When she writes, you hear Sonia, and that's great. Example of voice. With podcasting, they literally hear your voice, and you have the opportunity, I guess, to choose the aspect of your authentic self, the persona that is best suited for that audience once again. So it could be irreverent, it could be super professional, it could be whatever is the right choice. And that's something that you don't necessarily figure out from day one. I know I've been experimenting with, different approaches to how I speak on the podcast. And that's really what it is. It's an experiment, but you get feedback, you get a feel for it, and most of all, you get comfortable. And there's no way to get that comfort level or confidence other than just doing it. And I know that can be the hardest thing to do, but Robert Bruce loves to remind me that when we did our first podcast in 2010, we were absolutely wretched. And I have to take his word for it, because I'm too scared to go back and listen. So everyone has to get better through practice. Okay, so if you go to unemployable.com, this is a very simple site right now built on Rainmaker. Really, if you look at it, you'll only see the homepage. There's a couple of public background pages for when people register for the site and things like that. But at this point, it's basically a very simple membership site powered by a podcast. Now, in order to get people to register, if you were in attendance on the last webinar or if you saw the replay, we're talking about this concept of membership and registration as a way of, again, go back to that. I'm trying to help a tribe of people that I belong to. Not necessarily the leader of the tribe, but, you know, a guide, someone who helps. That's how I'm positioning myself. So you create a sense of belonging with the registered member, even though I'm not charging money. Now, what I've done here in this sense to start off with, this is a very young project. The podcast is the backbone. That's what I show up twice a week and deliver. And I position those as audio lessons to provide an air of actual higher value than your average rambling podcast. We're going to talk about the importance of that in a minute. Now, it can't just be a claim of higher value. It has to be actual value that is perceived as such by the audience. Long and short, this is the very beginning of what will become a learning center that has a media aspect to it. In essence, a podcast is the modern version of the radio show. It's on demand. It's, you know, free for anyone to do. But we have a precedent here that people love to listen to this type of stuff, especially if it adds value to their life. So what I'm really doing is creating an educational media property. It can be entertaining. It can be enjoyable. Just like Mythbusters, you learn something every week, but you also have a great time learning as you go along. So here's what I'm trying to get at. In the world of content, especially when advertising models, I mean, the flood of daily content borders on ridiculous. But even those who are doing content marketing, where it's not about page views and ad impressions and all that, they still had this publish more and more and more and more and more. And let's face it, that was basically back in the day when Google rewarded that. It didn't have to necessarily be the greatest content in the world. There just had to be a lot of it. I think those days are somewhat safely behind us. And it's a good thing because I don't think producing that much content is in anyone's best interest when what you're really trying to do is build a business, not create a content farm. So what we're trying to do with this strategy is create great content, but less of it, because great content takes a little bit more thought and work, right? Then we want to take that content and put it in more formats so that it appeals to more people. But more than just volume of people, we're able to create more meaning, more meaningful value for people than we could do if we were just writing blog posts and that was it. Okay, so longtime copy blogger readers know that we talk about cornerstone content. These are basically the topics that people would like to be educated on. And those are the same topics that if you do a good job of providing value in those areas, they'll be ready to do business with you at some point. So again, to make this a little more concrete, if you go to unemployable.com and you scroll down to the second section of the homepage, you'll see 7 critical topic areas. These are my cornerstone topics. It's not that mysterious. They're like categories that you know as a person that has something to teach that people need to know. So mindset, marketing, development, support, operations, finance, legal, those are my cornerstone topics. Now, they're very broad, and there's lots of room in there to drill down into, let's say, in legal. I mean, we've got contracts, we've got litigation, we've got intellectual property, we've got, let's not make the FTC mad at us. So theoretically, those could all be subcategories, but right now I don't want you thinking that way. I want you to think broad topics, because this provides you with a very concrete content map, an execution strategy where you know you need to touch on these topics. So instead of talking about the same thing week in and week out, you're able to vary your approach, cover your bases, and then loop around once you've gone through a cycle of episodes on each topic area. You'll know, hey, people really resonated when I talked about avoiding the wrath of the FTC. And that tells me something important. This is all part of this ongoing content process where we learn what works and we do less of what doesn't work. Okay, so this is a question I get a lot, and of course, the answer is it depends. Now, at the in the first 13 episodes of Unemployable, they were just me. There's no guest. It was up to me to come up with a topic, but I also set up a recording software for my registered members so that they could record a question for me. And that gives me a lot of great information. Number one, it tells me some of the stuff that people are struggling with. You can't get better feedback for show development than someone giving you a real life problem. So I was able to take some of those questions and then answer the question, but also turn it into a teachable moment for the entire audience. So instead of, you know, getting lost in the details of that particular person's business or their particular problem, I would address the problem and then I would extrapolate out so that all the listeners would get value out of the episode. And that's a very good content strategy. If you have any sort of existing client base, existing audience, and you're thinking of starting a podcast, asking people for questions. Don't give them multiple choice surveys. Don't say anything. Just say, what do you want to ask me? Ask me anything. That open format approach is really good. So anyway, to the particular topic that we're on with this slide, the early episodes of Unemployable were written out word for word. And the first episode, you can tell at the beginning that I'm reading. And then I get a little more comfortable and it sounds more natural. By episodes 2, 3, and 4, it doesn't sound like I'm reading at all. And a lot of people internally that I respect, such as Jared and Robert Bruce, were like, wow, I didn't think you had a script at all. Then, because it took me a lot of time to write everything out in advance in order to take that approach, I went back to what I used to do, which was an outline format. And yet, because through the process of practicing over the years and trying to get more and more natural, then Robert and Jared thought that I was working from a script, but I wasn't, because it sounded the same. And that's really what you're going for here from a presentation standpoint. You're just talking to your audience. Even better, you're talking to one of them as opposed to all of them. That's how it wants to come across. But the benefit of starting out there, if you're a writer, with more or less an article that you've written in a style that's easy to read, which is turns out to be good copy in the first place, you are now kind of ahead of the game, because instead of having to have a transcript prepared, you started with one. Now you've already got two pieces of content for two distinct channels, audio people and text people. So the audio aspect. So for years, Copyblogger was text only, pretty much. We did some audio, but it was always in the background. We did some video, but it was way in the background, because the audience I was after were writers. And that had served us well for a long time. But the reality is, out there in the broader population, depending on what your topic is, odds are they're not going to be readers. Writers, I'm a reader. That's my, you know, favored way to consume information. It's my learning style. But we're weird, frankly, compared to the general population, which is why you see a lot of video-based instruction, and it just does gangbusters. But we have seen, oddly enough, the internet started text-based, and it kept going that way because of search engines. Everyone was just seduced by the power of ranking well in Google. But the second largest search engine is also owned by Google, and it's called YouTube. So then we saw video take off in a huge way. And it wasn't until really 2014 that the 9-year-old medium of podcasting had its own moment. And it's interesting, because in old media circles, terrestrial radio is still the most consumed content on the planet. So audio is huge. And as we're continuing to talk about, audio is essential if you're trying to reach a broader swath of the overall audience that would be interested in what you have to do. So don't fall into the text only thing if you're a writer. That's comfortable to you. It's what you prefer. But just remember, in that regard, topically, you may be like your audience, but you may not be the same as them in form of consumption. So on this slide, when I'm saying audio lesson, again, that's a higher perceived value label than podcast episode. And again, a lot of podcasts aren't that great. So I encourage you to think in terms of audio lessons. You're educating people to do business with you, but you'll see as you go down the road, this gives you an amazing amount of latitude to repurpose content into other more valuable, higher perceived valuable dynamics. So the mainstay of the podcasting world is the audio interview. All the big shows do it to a certain degree, except for Serial and, you know, This American Life and the real big dogs. And that's interesting, right? That's fine. As far as content production to attract the right type of people to you, and then ultimately so that they'll do business with you in some format, the audio interview is an easy way to create content that you can later repurpose into other formats. The only tip I have here is be genuinely interested in who you interview. If you're actually learning something from them, it will come across and people will be engaged. And if you're just going through the motions, that'll come through as well. So once, you know, whatever it is that you've recorded, if you did not start with essentially writing out what amounts to an article and then recording it in a natural voice, the other approach is to start with audio, get the stuff out of you. You know, I was talking to Joe Paluzzi the other day, who just wrote a book essentially by podcasting it. And you're hearing more and more of that because you get the core ideas out, you get a transcript made, and then you start editing as opposed to starting with a blank page. So I will tell you this, an optimized transcript is not just a transcript you'll get from a transcription service. There's been a level of editing before you then try to repurpose it into something else. But as far as SEO for podcasting and, you know, podcast sites, that does help your site rank better in search engines because there is that text content there that Google loves. And then also people who come by and our readers can go down, scan the transcript. Maybe that convinces them to listen, or maybe that's really all they need to get something out of it. But optimized just means it's cleaned up, subheads are added for easier scannability and readability. And that in itself is what I would call an ancillary or supplemental form of content to the audio itself. So you have this transcript at that point. Let's say that you interviewed Seth Godin, and Seth, in his usual way, drops all sorts of nuggets of quotable content that you could take the basic idea of what he's talking about, and then that can be turned into an article where you're citing best-selling author Seth Godin. So that is a old school journalistic, you know, technique. If I get interviewed for a traditional magazine, they're always going to basically record the conversation so they're accurate, but also so that they capture everything that I said. And then later they can pull from there and figure out what nuggets of information are they building the article around, but also what quotes from me will they be using in that article. So think that way as well. When you create content for one audience channel, you've got plenty of other material to work with. Now, here is something very interesting. Again, if you're going after a reader market as opposed to the audio channel that you're already serving, because as I mentioned, there are people who write traditionally published books basically by getting the material out of themselves in podcast format. And that, so you can eventually, if you can make a short article, you can make a chapter. And if you can make a chapter, you can make a book. So it is a For a natural writer, that may seem backwards, but even then, you're creating content for multiple channels right from the beginning. And as I mentioned before, Joe Paluzzi did that approach. And we've done it ourselves in the past, although it wasn't necessarily for books. And we're going to get to that in just a second. Jared, what's the next slide here? Okay, so here's the other interesting thing as opposed to writing a traditional book. When we started my new Rainmaker podcast in January of 2014, my goal, remember what we were talking about at the beginning, begin with the end in mind. What are you trying to achieve? And at the time, people just said, oh, Brian's starting a new podcast. No, Brian was launching the Rainmaker platform. And we did it with a podcast, which I think kind of blew a lot of people's minds given our text-heavy background. But think about what I said in terms of audio lessons. When I went in and started doing that podcast, there were no guests. I wrote out every episode, and I was effectively, in a sense, writing a book that was delivered in the form of audio, and it did really well as a podcast. It got its start. It built an audience. When it launched, it was number one in business in iTunes. You know, that's an amazing awareness experience for people who may not be familiar with us from the blog. But at the same time, I had a different goal for that content in mind. Yes, it was free podcast content that helped build an audience that we didn't have yet, but it was also designed to be repurposed into a course. And that's exactly what we ended up doing. I think I did 10 episodes. I threw out two of them. Eight of them became the lessons for a opt-in course. We didn't charge money for it. We could have, and that's another important point. Create something that's worth buying, and it'll be great for content marketing. So we repurposed those using Rainmaker to drip it out as a opt-in course, build an email list, obviously, and delivers content on a preset schedule that we set for people, and it just drips out. And I basically positioned it as 2 weeks of training that will change the way you think about online marketing. Once I had that opt-in audience, I then did three webinars in order to intensify the education, the groundwork that I had laid with the audio lessons. And the third one basically launched the pilot program for the Rainmaker platform. So think about that in terms of, you know, when you start with the objective that you're trying to ultimately accomplish. In my case, I was trying to launch our new SaaS platform. I had to work backwards from there and figure out what do people need to know. And that was really successful for us. And it informed a lot of the way we're thinking about whether you script it out or not, you're still focusing on audio because it has so many purposes for so many different people. So as I mentioned, I could easily flip the switch today and turn that, you know, new Rainmaker media, not marketing training into a course. Trust me, people are charging hundreds of dollars for stuff that's not as useful as that. I'm not trying to brag. I'm just saying that my mindset is to deliver content that I would or could charge money for. And when I do that, I realize that my real objective, the thing I'm really trying to do, becomes much easier. It happens because I really focused on value instead of saying, well, I don't want to give away too much, or, you know, these people are taking me for a ride because not all of them are buying. That's a bad mindset. You don't want to have that. Okay, so, and as you can see with Unemployable and what the example I just gave you with New Rainmaker, you've got all this content. So a lot of the stories and examples I used in that media not marketing course were great for turning into slideshare presentations. And so at that point, obviously in our organization, we have very talented designers. But if you're more of a solo or small organization, you should be able to work with a freelance designer who can create attractive slides for you. You could then take what effectively was a slideshare presentation to test it out to see how it works in visual format. If it works, Do a video, turn it into a video, do a webinar on it. You've already created the visual collateral, which was based on audio, and you've tested it. That's the thing. You're not starting with a webinar that you have no idea if it's going to resonate with people. Instead, you're working your way up the value chain in different formats that can often be more expensive to produce. And then, speaking of more expensive to produce, infographics went through a phase there where they got overdone, but it was mainly in the marketing space, and in particularly the content marketing space. They still work great in other niches, so don't write them off. But it to get an infographic put together can cost a couple $1,000s in design work and additional research and all that kind of thing. But again, if you've started with content that you put out in a very easy to produce format, such as audio, and it resonates and you get great feedback and you know you connected with someone, that's when you know it's okay to spend the money. Now, how many stories do we hear about people who say, I spent $3,000 on a webinar, it went nowhere, infographics don't work? No, infographics are information. How you present that information, how you frame it, how you position it, what's the story you're telling, what's the value to the audience. That stuff you should probably figure out before you spend $3,000 on an infographic. So this is the biggest takeaway. Podcasting or audio content is an easy and inexpensive way to experiment. It's a way to take your educated guesses about who these people are, what they need, and what you have to offer them, putting it out there. There's some interesting things going on right now with people using low-cost social advertising to distribute their podcast content so that they get enough traction to get that feedback. And I'm all for that. I mean, you're not going to break the bank, but the overall cost up front to test ideas is much lower. And this is true whether you have an existing audience or you're starting out fresh. There's so many options out there to do very low cost testing of concepts and ideas, and then making bigger investments once you understand what's going to actually work. So I think that is, from my end, what we need to know in order to start a podcast that's going to work, and what to do with that content. I mean, you're creating and repurposing with a business objective in mind. And this is a procedure that we are very bullish on, even though CopyBlogger was built on written content. But just remember why that was. Number one, for the audience I was targeting at the time, that was the right move. As we've grown as a company, we have to expand beyond the confines of text, and that's why we've gone so heavily into audio. But for most of you, audio is the channel you need to start with, and then once you figure out what works, you're able to create any type of content that you want out of that. Now, many of you know that we have an entire podcast network that we launched about 6 months ago called Rainmaker FM. That's rainmaker.fm if you haven't been over there. But it's a lot of the topics that we cover on CopyBlogger, and we're using a lot of our in-house talent to create these shows. Now, do you have to create an entire podcast network? No, you don't. But you could, because that entire site is built on the Rainmaker platform, just a standard install with a custom design, which anyone can do. So I think Jared is going to show you a little bit about how start your first podcast. Let's go with that. But you have to understand that the power of the platform that you could use to do it, which includes all the podcasting tools and storage and all this stuff in one neat little package for one price, could be used to add a second show and a third show. And next thing you know, you've got three shows, you've got a podcast network, and who knows where it leads from there. Jared? Mm-hmm.
I'm ready. You ready for a break and a drink of water?
Definitely a drink of water.
All right. So let's talk now. Let's take what Brian said, and let's talk now about how to actually do this with the Rainmaker platform, the nuts and bolts of actually getting in there and getting a podcast out. And you know, I was podcasting before I started using Rainmaker, before I even joined CopyBlogger. And one of my big frustrations was just, you know, the struggle with the technology part of it. I mean, I wanted to record my content and get it out there, but there haven't been a lot of solutions that make that simple. And that's one of the reasons why I personally love using the Rainmaker platform, because it does that. And so I'm going to show you, take you in the back end here and show you how the podcast tools for the Rainmaker platform work. And so I'm in the back end. This is my own site here, primality.com. And the first place that I want to start, and the first note that I want to make here, is that you don't need to take notes of any of this, okay? You don't, I mean, I'm going to show you, I'm going to basically give you a tutorial of how this works, but you don't need to take notes, you know, if you already have Rainmaker, if you're getting ready to start the trial, because the documentation that we have in the back end of the Rainmaker platform is phenomenal. And our documentation team has been doing such a wonderful job. And I want to start there, because if you click on this green button right here for any topic, you can get incredible documentation, walkthroughs, videos, and obviously that is true for podcasts. So you click on podcasts right here. There's a video, how to use the podcasting tools. If you like the voice that you're listening to right now, it's the same voice that you'll hear on that video, because I did that tutorial of how to use the podcasting tools. And then each of these right here is a walkthrough, which will basically take you, if you want to create a podcast series or a podcast episode, you can click on this and it will walk you through each one of the steps that you need. And this is the first step that comes up, is it will actually take you to this podcast guide. And so I'll show you this real quick. And it's just to make sure that you know that once you get back in here, you have all the tools you need to make this work. Again, you don't have to remember this. You don't have to memorize this. It is all back here, step by step, guiding you by the hand and showing you how all of this works with the podcast guide. And there's a checklist too, and I'm going to show you that at the end, because it's a very, very nice, useful addition to the podcast tools. So let's start here with creating a podcast episode. Most fundamental action that we will take when we are podcasting is creating an episode. All right. So if we go to add new and go to podcast episode, if you're familiar with WordPress, this screen will look very familiar to you. If not, it's pretty intuitive what's going on here. But what you will notice that is different for the podcast episode post type is this widget right here, episode details. So this is the heart of the podcast episode. And obviously, to create a podcast episode, you have to have an MP3 file or a video file, okay, if you're doing a video podcast, and Rainmaker will work for video podcasts as well. But for your audio file, you just click this button and you upload your audio file right here. Okay, now the big benefit of this is all of your audio hosting is done through the Rainmaker platform. So you don't need a separate hosting account. You don't need to upload your file somewhere else and then bring the URL in here. You upload the file here and then you just get the URL for it. Like this is the one that I did for earlier today. Hit select, your URL is in there, ready to go when you hit publish, ready to go in your player, ready to be uploaded to iTunes, ready for all of the different ways that you're going to need to use that audio file. All right, you can then determine where the player goes, and I'll show you how this all fits together on the post in a minute. So you can manually place it, or you can show it before the content or after the content, either one. I prefer manual placement myself. And the duration and file size will be automatically calculated after you save and you have this file in there. It will actually automatically calculate this for you, so you don't need to do anything with these for the most part. And then you can mark it explicit if you get a little loose with your language. You can mark it as explicit, and you can block it from iTunes as well. So these options right there are the heart of the podcast episode post type. And then, of course, you'll want to choose over here which series this is a part of. And I only have one series here, so it's a pretty easy option for me on this site, as opposed to Rainmaker FM, where we have about 20 different options here. And then everything else is pretty standard. So this title here will be the title that is inside of the RSS feed. So this is a title that will go to iTunes. And then you put your content here. And what you will get here is I'll show you a podcast episode page from this site. I'll show you the episode that I posted earlier today, which is this episode number 33. And as you can see down here, I've got my content in here. So I've got my description content of the episode and then this beautiful podcast player. And again, this is because I put in the manual placement, and I'll show you then the short code that we use in a moment. But this all comes up automatically. This is not done manually. And there are settings where you can dictate what, you know, what comes up with this player, the download audio, the subscribe. I've got some custom in here. And then I add a video and do some other stuff to it. So let me show you the back end of this specific episode. So this was what it looked like fresh. Here's what it looks like when it's all done. Okay, so I've got my headline here. I like doing numbering conventions at the beginning of my posts. You can use those if you want to. You don't have to, it's up to you. But you type in your content here, and then you can see that I've got my player right here. And on these episodes, this is just a little tip that I will offer to everybody who's doing this is, you know, on mine, and you may too on your episodes, if it's standard that you have a video or certain text like this that's always there, you want to include an email call to action. I actually just use a text expander. And so I just have it automatically put in. I have a template that I use, and then I can just paste in my video, do whatever I want. And that actually makes it much more efficient. And certainly nothing in here is going to restrict you from doing anything like that to add efficiencies to your podcast publishing. So that is what the post will ultimately look like. Then, of course, you have all different, depending on your design and any customizations that you add, it can look a lot different too. And let me offer you one more tip here is as you go down on this page, you'll see the rest of your typical WordPress widgets or typical Rainmaker platform widgets. So this SEO widget right here is important because you'll see that my title down here is different. So this says Primality Primer, and then it has the naming convention in the title. The reason why that's different from what is up here is because if I click on iTunes, you notice how all of my titles start with the number. Well, that's what I want to happen. I don't need it muddied up with Primality Primer because that's the name of the podcast itself. But the reason why I do this down here is so that when it is tweeted, or when it is put into social media, this is the title that will be pulled. So you have the flexibility here of having a few different titles based on what you put into your post edit or your podcast edit page. So that's a basic overview. And then also the last thing to show is that you can use this featured image, and the featured image then will actually work with how the episodes are displayed. So let me show you where that comes in. This is my series page, and it pulls these featured images, and I use Canva to make this. I have a template in Canva, and I just go really simple and just change the title. There's obviously many ways that you can do this, whatever your visual style is going to be, but this is where it will pull this. And again, it just helps to make your display of your episodes of your series a little bit more attractive. So that's the individual. Yes.
I just wanted to say the one thing you may want to show is we do have a way to set up a podcast that the series information itself, because I know mm-hmm. some people are thinking, how does this get into iTunes? Well, you actually use Rainmaker to create the feed that mm-hmm. is submitted to iTunes. So there is one step, one time that you have to create your podcast in Rainmaker. Then you're given a link, and you go to iTunes, and you have to have an account, and then you submit it to iTunes. A couple days later, it will appear in iTunes. But from that day forward, you never deal with iTunes again. You just go back to your actual podcast series page, and you can change your description to add, you know, as you go along. I think I've tweaked my unemployable description 5 times as yeah. I go through it, and you get feedback and you get more refined, right? And you do all that in Rainmaker. You never have to go to iTunes beyond the first time. The same thing is true with Stitcher.
Yep, and that's what I wanted to show folks next is how that all fits together. And as you said, this URL right here, and right now I'm inside of the series settings here for Primality Primer, because actually I plan on turning this into a network. So I'm, as Brian said, thinking with the end in mind. And so I've already got this set out as a series. And you're right, you can change your name, you can change your description, your subtitle, everything. This URL right here, when you go to submit to iTunes, this is what you will give them is this URL. And then if you ever want to change it, you come back in here. You don't actually do that with iTunes. You come back in here and you can change your description and you can change your image. and change, and you can also change on the series page. So I showed you the series page that I have. Well, this is where all of that is done. Right here is in this, you know, with the archive headline, with the archive intro text. And so you have a lot of flexibility for how you want to display that. And then let's go over here to the general podcast settings. And so these are going to be your general podcast settings right here. And what I want to show here is how you can customize the player. So if we go back to the individual episode, you'll see how the player is displayed. And so it pulls your featured image. It has your headline up here. So that'll be based on what you do inside of the post edit page. And then you can put in your iTunes feed link so that when you click subscribe, that it will go to the correct link. And then you can also add a custom footer. So I have Primality and Stitcher, and I wanted that information there. And I also have a note that this is recorded live, so how people can check out the show live. And I want that to go underneath every one of these players. So we put that in there. And then universally on the players, now it will go in there. I don't have to go in and add that every time. So again, it adds efficiencies to what we're doing with our podcast editing and posting. And then we have a number of different settings down here. A number of different global podcasting settings down here that we can set and use based on how we want our podcast to be displayed and even shared. So one really nice element of the player is that this player can be shared, and it has an embed code on each one. Now, you can take that off if you don't want people to embed your player. One way that I personally use this is that I like to display the latest show on my homepage in a widget. And so I have a widget in here. I can take you to it real quick. A widget in here, right here in the content areas. And so when I click in here, then I just have that the iframe code pasted in. And where I get that is from right here. And so it makes it nice and easy to display your episode in different places, on other sites, on other places of your site. It gives you a lot of flexibility to be able to do that. Now, I mentioned earlier the checklist, and this is a new feature inside of our knowledge base that I absolutely love because, you know, having run the Showrunner course, hosting the Showrunner podcast, you know, one thing people who haven't podcasted before get a little bit intimidated by, and I totally get it because I felt the same way when I started, is how much there is to kind of do and remember. And people feel like they're going to forget things. And, you know, if they're not technically savvy, they're going to leave something out there. Or if they haven't done the content part before, that they'll leave something out there. Well, this checklist does a really nice job of walking you through everything that you need to do to get your podcast set up, that you need to do to submit it to iTunes. And it's a literal checklist. I mean, you can go in here and check off what you've done, what you haven't, and it just walks you step by step. And, you know, I think the tools in here, certainly once you use them, they're very intuitive, very simple. But if this is your first time in the back end of a content management system, or if you're just, you know, you want to feel properly oriented, there's so much help back here in the knowledge base that will allow you to use these simple tools, start putting your podcast out there, and then be able to basically follow through the strategy, the process that Brian laid out, to use it not just to create and distribute audio episodes, but to actually use it to seed this content library and beyond for whatever your general purpose is beyond that. But that is that's the basic overview of the podcast. Well, actually, that's not everything. Let me show you one more thing, because obviously you want to know if people are listening, how often they're listening. And so there are podcast reports back here. And so you can, based on what time period you want, whether you want to look at today, whether you want to look at the last year or custom, and then you can actually do a summary of an individual, or you can do all of the episodes and look at the number of downloads, including how long people listened through an episode, if they listened on the page, how many downloads you got from any source, and then you can actually drill in on individual episodes as well and look at those. And that helps give you a snapshot based on whatever date range you need for if people are actually listening, how much attention it's giving you, so forth and so on.
So, Jared, you mentioned that you may turn Primility into a podcast network.
Yes.
Let's say I've got a show for you. I hit you up. We agree that we want to join forces. What would you do to add my show to Primility?
An excellent question. So what I would do is I would go over here to my main podcast settings, and there's a button over here, Manage Podcast Network. And you can get there from a couple different places. And again, if you forget how to do that, go here to podcasts, click on Create a Podcast Series, and it'll show you exactly how to do this. But basically what I would do, Brian, is I would just come right here and just add a new series. And so I'll just call it Brian's New Show, give it whatever slug we want, add a new podcast series. This is a new thing, so you now need to create a show for me on Primility, which would be great. And then go in here and basically create all the settings. And so, you know, whatever the artwork is, it's going to come up with the default information that we have in our general settings. So we would just customize all of this for whatever your show is. And then we'd be good to go. And then we would have the individual URL right here that we would submit to iTunes, and we'd be all set. And as soon as we started publishing episodes, we could have an individual archive page for it and start doing everything that we want to do with the podcast.
Yeah. And so more or less, that's what we do with Rainmaker.fm times 20. It's this actual process. And then, of course, we have our production processes outside of that. But as far as publishing, once you set up the new show, it's as easy as any one show.
Yep. And here, and you can actually see here on the series page for Rainmaker FM, here all the different shows showing you exactly the process I just did. And obviously, these have already been done for all of these different shows. So I think, were there any other elements that you wanted to show? That's most of what I had, which I think provides the basic overview of what the tools are, how they work.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, once you start your first show, again, adding an additional show it's the same process. It's not some unwieldy thing where you're reinventing the wheel. It's just adding more content, similar to if you added a guest writer like we did in the early days of Copyblogger.
And the nice thing is, too, they don't have to be separated. So like with Rainmaker FM, we have the master feed. And if we look, the podcast settings here are all for the master feed. And then back on the page that we were just on are the individual feeds. And so each one of these is individual in iTunes. But then there's also the master feed in iTunes where people can get the entire Rainmaker FM fire hose if they want it. And so that gives you a lot of flexibility with your podcast. You know, if not everything should go together, if you want to split something out separate, you know, I know a lot of people will do, you know, just an 8 to 10 episode podcast series, you know, use it for lead generation. It's not necessarily ongoing, but they want it to be in iTunes to be able to capture that search. And so you could do this with the series functionality of Rainmaker platform as well.
Cool. All right, we're getting a few questions, and a lot of them are at a more fundamental level. So let's take some time to answer a few of those. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that works for me. Let's do
it. So we've got a couple of questions just on basic, you know, how do you record a podcast? How do you edit a podcast? I will tell you that there is some really good information freely available online from a technical standpoint. You can get mic recommendations. You can get editing software recommendations. I use a Shure mic with, you know, GarageBand to record. I'm not a very technical person, but it's not that complicated. But we, for the network, we used to do all our editing in-house, and to do that many shows, what we did was find a production, an audio production partner who's a vendor to us, and they handled the show in conjunction with our process. But you can certainly learn from a technical standpoint how to recording is not that big a deal. I would definitely just do some research into that. Editing is something that I've always gotten someone else to do just because it's probably not my primary skill set, and other people are better at it, and my time is better served elsewhere. So you may want to consider some low-cost help with producing your podcast. That's what most of the big podcast personalities do. Some of them started out with outsourcing and others graduated to it as they generated a bit of revenue, but it's not going to break your bank from a production standpoint.
No, I was just going to say, I agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, for simple editing, you know, obviously you can use GarageBand, you know, there are programs like that. You know, the only hesitation, I mean, you're right that outsourcing it is great when you can. You know, you don't want to outsource the decisions of music and where things go and what the intro sounds like. You know, I think you want to be very hands-on with what the entire experience is. And I think sometimes people, when they outsource, they lose a little bit of that connection with the file, which then goes to the audience and creates that connection. So once you get your template set up and you know exactly what you want it to be, then yeah, get a system outsourced because it becomes more efficient. But just make sure that you listen to that final, you know, the final product before it goes out, you know, do that quality check because sometimes it's not exactly what you want. And I think you want to make sure that you have that before your voice is going inside of someone's ear.
So I've seen a couple of times that the question come up of the ideal length of a podcast. Mm-hmm. Now, in the area of text content, I get annoyed when I see articles about the ideal length for a tweet and, you know, an article and this and that. You know, I mean, long enough to do the job, I think, is the answer. However, in podcasting, I do have some pretty good opinions on this, I think, from a few years of doing it. And Jared, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. But with Unemployable, when I came out with it, I was trying to provide actual concrete value in under 10 minutes. And when I was able to script it out, I was able to pull that off. I could get somewhere between 8 to 6, sometimes 7, 8 minutes. And to me, I thought that was like, you know, that's an ideal amount of time that someone could invest in your content without getting distracted or just going on and on and on and on. It's hard to be that concise and deliver or adequately cover a topic, but it's doable. And you really do, I think, in my opinion, have to script it out. When I'm going with an outline now, I'll end up around 15, which I'm still okay with because in my mind, and again, Jared, I want to hear what you think, 20 minutes and under is the ideal length. Now, I just did a whole batch full of interviews for Unemployable that'll be out soon. And some of them stayed between 20 and 30, which was my criteria for an interview. With an interview, I think there's enough back and forth in the conversation that keeps you more engaged than when it's just you. And but sometimes the conversation was just good and it went 40 minutes, you know, and I know people out there who do interview shows and they're like, our stats show that people listen, you know, they keep listening as long as the value and engagement, and there's an aspect of entertainment to it. You know, it's not just boring, dry information. You've got personality coming through. Think about the radio. Why? What keeps you to continue to listen to a talk radio program or something of that nature? It's the same thing for podcasting. So you can get away with longer. My personal preference is to keep it under 20 if it's just me and under 30 if it's an interview. But again, if it's going well, I don't sweat it. Jared, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've read in several places that 18 to 22 minutes is kind of the sweet spot. And so I think if you go outside of that, it's totally fine because lots of shows do and are successful. And actually, every show that I do goes outside of that window. I think you just want to have a specific reason why. So like a monologue show, if it's just you, a little harder to carry. So I think you want to be in the 10 to 15 minute range, possibly even shorter if you're going every day. You know, I think your format and your frequency are really going to dictate how long the show is. You know, they're those kind of variables. But I think for an interview show, you know, I personally, I don't think you can get a great interview that's not a half hour. I just think most interview shows, it takes that amount of time to get the rapport, to get into the really good stuff. But, you know, and I think you just have to experiment a little bit to go back to your slide and see how the audience responds. But yeah, I mean, I think if you can do it, you know, in kind of that, you know, 18 to 22 minute sweet spot, you know, that's good. But I think it's just going to depend on, again, your format and your frequency.
Yeah. So we've got a question here that says, so right now Rainmaker comes with audio storage, and that's just included in the price for a reasonable amount of audio. Jared, I don't know how much that is. It's a lot. We've only had one person who exceeded that amount, and it was a ton of audio content that was migrated over from another site. And as he added to it, it finally hit this very high level that we have. So for most people, it would take you a couple of years, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to get that specific answer. But the concern, which is valid, is you're going to build your podcast and you're going to run out of space and we're going to hit you with some atrocious bill. No. For more space, it's something like $5 or $10, you know, and at that point, if you've created that much audio content, that means you've been running a show for a while. And if you're still running that show, it's working for you. You'll never feel it. So we can look and find out what that number is. But it was so high that we couldn't believe someone actually hit it, but it was a migration, not original content creation. So if you are just starting out, it will be years before we have a conversation that says maybe you need to pay us $5 more a month. And at that point, I think you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. And Bill asked a good question about what we feel is the ideal frequency. Again, it's going to depend. He says weekly. I think weekly is the default answer. And I would give the same answer that if you're going to go outside of weekly, I would have a specific reason why. So Primality Primer, for example, is a daily show. I do it every day. It's 10 minutes or less. And there's a very specific reason why, because it's got a live component to it at 6:30 in the morning. My other show, Assembly Call, is the frequency is all over the place because it's a live show after games. So there are specific reasons for that. You know, most of the shows on Rainmaker FM are weekly. It's the same day every week, the same time. And I think that is the standard. And really what you want to shoot for, no matter what your frequency is showing up on the same day and the same time. Because really thinking of these as shows as opposed to just podcasts is really important, because that's how your listeners, your audience is going to start thinking about them, and they're going to start expecting you to show up at that certain time. And so I think going, and I don't think you want to be outside of their mind too long. You don't want to disappear for too long. That's why getting in there once a week, even if they don't listen to you, just seeing that you showed up again in the feed can be important in just staying top of mind, so that when an episode does come up that has a compelling headline, they'll click on it, listen, and you won't have fallen back into the abyss of their subscriptions.
Yep. So Russell wants to know, can I repurpose episodes of another podcast I produced previously as part of a series on my Rainmaker site? Absolutely. That's the beautiful thing about owning your own content. And then Tim says, do you repurpose your podcast content on other channels such as SoundCloud? Okay, so let's do a quick definition check here. When we say repurpose, we mean change format. Syndication would be the fact that we provide content on, for example, Rainmaker.fm, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud. So that's a syndication concept because it's the same content going in different places. Repurposing is when you take audio and you turn it into a slide deck, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Adam asks if we have a podcast-only Rainmaker product that can be bought without the additional features themes. There's no podcast-only product. Everything is included in Rainmaker. And one of the things that we're doing with this webinar series is showing you each of these individual elements and how you use them and how they all work together as you execute your digital commerce strategy. So in our last webinar, it was email, how you use the features of the Rainmaker platform to build your email list. This one was podcasting. And then in the next one, you know, we're going to talk about creating downloads. And now, you know, if you've created that ebook, how do you actually incorporate that into Rainmaker using all of the tools so that it can actually be used for lead generation or so that you can sell it?
If, you know, Adam, if you want to create a podcast, we preach this all the time. You don't just want to depend on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud. You want your own site. So you got to have a website component with your podcast, which of course Rainmaker does. But what we're really teaching here is specifically with this webinar is not how to create a podcast, but how to create or build your business with a podcast. And those are two different things. And I think you're asking, I just want to create a podcast. And I would say, why? You know, again, what's the end in mind? What are you trying to actually accomplish? You're trying to, I would think, build a business. And Rainmaker is a total marketing technology solution. As it continues to evolve, you know, we're adding more sophisticated marketing automation, included email, all this stuff, to where you never have to go outside of Rainmaker really to build your ultimate goal of building a business. You just go to other places in order to spread your content. So you always want a home base to point back at. And even with Unemployable, it's very young, and yet it's using membership features, it's using marketing automation features, it's using email functionality. I don't think there's any such thing as just a podcast that anyone successful has ever really accomplished.
Mm-hmm. And then it looks like the last question here is, if I have an existing website and plan to start a podcast, should I call the podcast the same name? You certainly could. I don't think that you need to. I think thinking about the name of your show and the branding of your show is very important. We talk about this on the Showrunner and Inside the Course a lot. You know, you really, with so many new podcasts out there, you really want to find out what makes you different, find out what makes you stand out. And certainly if you have an existing website, you're going to have some built-in listeners that you're going to be able to promote that podcast to in the beginning, you know, to kind of seed that audience. But you're also going to want to position your podcast for success inside of iTunes and for discovery from people outside of the audience that you already have. And so I think it's important to study the other podcast in your niche. What are their names? What does their artwork look like? How are you going to fit in? And so depending on the name of your website, that may be the perfect fit for your show. But you also may want to alter it a little bit, like I did with calling it Primility Primer instead of Primility. You know, and obviously with Rainmaker FM, all of those shows have their own names because it's a series. But even, you know, New Rainmaker was different than Rainmaker FM. So there's no set way to answer that. But I would say don't just assume that you're going to name it exactly what your website name is, because there may be, depending on your niche, depending on its saturation, and depending on what the goal of your show is, there may be a better name to serve the actual podcast.
Yep. All right. We have one more, time for one more, I should say, before we need to wrap this up. But Andrew's got an excellent question. He says, I promote a radio show and publish the previously aired shows on my client's website. How is Rainmaker a better platform than publishing on WordPress? Okay. So Rainmaker, if you look at it from a historical standpoint, is a highly customized, much more powerful version of WordPress. And the reason why we built Rainmaker is everyone in this business that uses WordPress uses a highly customized, powerful version of WordPress that they've usually paid a lot of money for. They have developers to update and manage and all of that kind of thing. So this is our version that we use to, you know, we'll do $12 million in revenue this year using this technology. No one uses at this level, or any level of, like, you know, once it becomes a necessary asset for your business, you don't use WordPress right out of the box. So you're getting into plugins and themes and custom themes and custom post types and hacks from your developer, which costs money to maintain. But then, of course, you've got security, you've got WordPress updates, you've got plugins that need to be updated and can expose security holes and all this stuff. So Rainmaker compared to WordPress is a highly customized CMS. I think as we go forward with Rainmaker, it's going to be harder and harder to even see that WordPress is there, because our goal is to truly make it the absolute best thing we can make it from a business context, not necessarily just an open source or enthusiast context. But a lot of the reason that people come to us is avoiding patching together all these different elements that may not work nicely together. But we also manage it for you. We update it for you. We're watching security threats for you. And when you're a content creator and a business owner, you don't want to spend time or money with that concern. So besides the power and the strategy that goes into the elements that we've included, it's really an exercise in peace of mind compared to the potential downside and the frustration and all of that kind of thing. So that, I would say in a nutshell, is if you're going to build a business with a WordPress website, it's going to have certain elements included in it. And you're either going to have to build that yourself and maintain it yourself, or hire someone to build it and maintain it for you, or you could go with Rainmaker.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right.
Okay. Oh, yeah. One last thing. sound like the ShamWow guy all of a sudden. Sorry. But there's more. No, seriously, though, we talked about this last time we did a webinar, that we try to make these webinars into, just like we preach, highly valuable on their own, whether you use Rainmaker or not. Hopefully, they kind of highlight the ways Rainmaker is a better solution than perhaps something else that's out there. One thing that for the last year people have found incredibly valuable about Rainmaker is that it comes bundled with our authority content marketing training at no additional charge. And we've said all along that we're giving our best deal to our early adopters. And the thing that is coming next, like, we don't discount Rainmaker, number one. I saw someone else looking for a coupon or something. Yeah, that's not our strategy. In fact, Rainmaker is probably going to progressively get more expensive. But right now, Authority, which I think cost $400 a year, is included with your Rainmaker platform subscription. So therefore, you're getting 250 hours of existing training. When you start your free trial with Rainmaker, you get access to Authority. So really, you're getting 2 weeks to play around with the platform, but you're also getting 2 weeks to see what's going on inside our training community. And we add several webinars a month, Q&As, forum interaction where you can, you know, get answers, questions answered, and collaborate with other people and all that good stuff. Mid-September, we are taking Authority away as a bundled free aspect of Rainmaker. That training is worth real money. It's probably worth more than the money we charge for it separately. So if you are interested in Rainmaker, I would start your free trial, see if it works for you. Check out inside of Authority to get hours and hours and hours of this kind of level of strategic training, and even be able to drill down into some of the tactics that we mentioned here today if there's any confusion. And often there is on that standpoint. We can only do so much in 1 hour, but 250 hours is a different story. So Authority is free with Rainmaker if you start your trial and sign up before we take it away mid-September. Just a heads up on that. If you're thinking about it, there's a lot of value that you can capture now that will cost more later.
Absolutely. And just a reminder that at rainmakerplatform.com/webinar, we have all of this series of six webinars that we are doing. There will be another one coming out next month, and we'll have the sign up ready for that soon. So be on the lookout for that as we continue going through this Rainmaker Platform webinar series.
Yeah, one last thing. Mary asked if you're locked in at the price. Absolutely. You will never, as long as you maintain your account, you'll never pay more. Unless, of course, you upgrade to Pro, and that would be your own choice, or if you don't start with it. But yes, every Rainmaker customer gets the deal they sign up for on that day forever, unless you cancel. And we certainly will work our hardest to make sure that you don't want to cancel.
Yes. So,
just to clarify that for Mary, if you sign up right now, that price is what you'll pay. You'll always get Authority included. And if there's any additional things that, this is another one that Jared always points out. It's not just that you're locked in at that price for this version of Rainmaker. You're locked in at that price for every time we update the platform, which happens at least six times a year or so. Mm-hmm. So you're locked in at the price for what the platform is today, but it gets better every time we do a new update.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, very cool. Well, thank you everybody for being here. Brian, thank you for the informative presentation to kick us off. That was very wonderful. And
thanks for letting me in your podcast network. You know, because I'm only doing 3 episodes a week now.
Hey, thank you. I'm holding you to this. We got to figure out what this show's going to be about. All right, cool. Well, everybody, thank you very much. And we'll send out details for the next Rainmaker Platform webinar, which will be happening late next month. But other than that, have a great day and get out there and start your podcast. We'll talk to you all next month.
Bye, everyone.